This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. I would like to continue considering Emily Dickinson as a gardener. And as I mentioned last time, the people in her township most likely thought of her only as a gardener, not as a poet. Indeed, during her lifetime, Emily Dickinson was known more widely as a gardener, perhaps, than as a poet, says the author Judith Farr. Susan Dickinson's unfulfilled plan for a memoir of her sister-in-law listed love of flowers as Emily's first attribute. Her poetry, for the most part privately published, was often enclosed in letters pinned together by flowers, or in bouquets that made the poem concealed at the flower's center. And the flowers themselves, one message. Her father said of John Ruskin, whose modern painters deeply influenced Emily Dickinson, that he was a geologist first and an artist later. Even before she wrote poems, Dickinson was engaged in gathering, tending, categorizing, and pressing flowers. After writing, poet became her central preoccupation, cultivating bulbs, plants, and flowers within a portion of her father's land and in a glass enclosure of a conservatory built just for her, remained a favorite occupation. Not only did Emily Dickinson, but her mother and sister Lavinia tend gardens of the mansion called the Homestead. Emily speaks with frank possessiveness of my Puritan garden, yet in 1877 she describes Vinnie's garden from the door looks like a pond with sunset on it, and deplores heat, writing, Vinnie rocks her garden and moans. Emily had assisted her mother in the garden since she was 12, first at the house on West Street and then in the mansion on Main Street. During the 1860s and 1870s, her years of greatest artistic productivity, she was also developing skills, growing gardenias, jasmine, sweet peas, camellias, oleander, roses, heliotrope, and many other naturalized and native flowers. Just as her poems were uncommon, some of the flowers she chose to grow are unusual, gorgeous, and complex. Others, like gentians, anemones, were wildflowers associated with her simplicity of mind and heart, with youth and humility, fresh imagination, and the possibility of everlasting life. All were indices of her own spiritual, emotional state, while in her letters and poems she continually associates flowers with herself, making gardens and making poems. So I got out my Emily Dickinson collections and began reading and realized for the first time how many poems refer to flowers or are centered around flowers. Mid-Victorians liked to pun on the aesthetic associations between posies and poesies. Her flowers were Emily Dickinson's other poems. That's what she called her flowers, her other poems, which the conservatory could safely enshrine in an age when what Hawthorne contemptuously called women scribblers were not always received in society. Indeed, to be a notable gardener was a much more acceptable avocation for mid-Victorian women, meant to be the angel in the house, than to be a poet. Edward Dickinson, who was prouder of his only son's letters than of his brilliant daughter's poems, may have given Emily a conservatory, not only because he wished to please her, but because growing flowers was to him a more suitable occupation for a woman than writing verse. In her death notice, we can see this emphasis. It reads, "The death of Miss Emily Dickinson, daughter of the late Edward Dickinson at Amherst on Saturday, makes another sad inroad on the village, except among the older inhabitants knew Miss Emily personally, although the facts of her seclusion and her intellectual brilliancy were familiar Amherst traditions. There are many houses among all classes into which treasures of fruit and flowers were constantly sent that will forever miss those evidences of her unselfish consideration. One can speak of duties beautifully done, of her gentle tillage of rare flowers, filling her conservatory into which, as into the heavenly paradise, entered nothing that could defile, and which was ever abloom in frost or sunshine, so well she knew her chemistries. Although Susan, this is her sister-in-law, writes admiringly of Emily's poems, her swift poetic rapture was like long glistening note of a bird in June woods at high noon. It is her gardening that she attributes technical, virtuosic knowledge. The poems, over 250 of which were sent to Susan to read over the years, are described as tossed in startling picturesqueness on the page. A remark that is itself startling, coming from one who had constant evidence of 4 decades of how ardently Dickinson strove for the right word and the right image. Herself an amateur journalist and an aspiring, if incompetent, verse writer. The Dickinson property during the poet's lifetime was in effect a small farm with a barn, a fruit orchard, a vegetable garden, and a meadow across the road. Because Dickinson's poems and letters almost wholly concern flowers, however, this book does not give space to the pear and apple trees, the asparagus and potatoes that her niece remembers. It focuses on the premise that an understanding of the importance of her flowers in general and specific flowers in particular enriches our understanding of Emily Dickinson's life and art. She herself defined flowers and her poems as related gifts of the muse. Emily never explained how her flower garden was arranged. She kept no lists or records of her successes with various flowers, but she did allude to the flowers, their health and growth, in letters. According to the accounts of others like Martha Dickinson, she naturally designed cottage gardens that were evidence of the growing movement away from Victorian and European formalism. Emily, however, relished fragrant masses of seasonal bloom, but with an underlying plan, as her niece recalled. There were long beds filling the main garden, where one walked between a succession of daffodils, crocuses, and hyacinths in spring, though midsummer richness up to the hardy chrysanthemums that smelled of Thanksgiving, savory and chill, when only the marigolds, called them marigolds, were left to rival them in pungency. Many of the flowers were veritable old-time perennials, punctilious in reappearance. Well, there is a lot that could be said about Emily Dickinson and her flowers. I hope that you'll take interest in this and perhaps look up the 2 books that I've used. This one by Judith Farr and the one by Marta McDowell. So thank you for listening. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.